I have lots of co-authors and collaborators on this study who are listed there. No relationships to disclose. Some collaborators at the California Department of Public Health to thank, and also funding from the NIH. And if people are fascinated by this topic, I will say that the paper's just come out in the journal Vaccine. I'm going to gloss over some of the gory details on methods, but if you're interested, it's all in the paper. So probably don't need to tell this audience that we are in what I would consider sort of an epidemic of parental vaccine concern, vaccine hesitancy, and even vaccine refusal. The most recent wave of that, and we can time to 1998 and the Wakefield paper purporting a link between the MMR vaccine and autism. One really important manifestation of that vaccine hesitancy and refusal is non-medical exemptions from school entry immunization mandates. Here's a map in the country of where non-medical exemptions and the type of non-medical exemptions are available. They're currently available in all states except two, Mississippi and West Virginia. And we'll talk more about that a little bit later because that's about to change as well. This study is focused in California for a number of reasons, and here's just the change in what California calls personal belief exemptions over the last 15 years or so. So well under 1% in the mid-90s, climbing up over 3% by 2013. So that's the percent of the entering kindergarten cohort where the parent has procured a personal belief exemption from the immunizations that California requires for school entry. So let me motivate this a little bit. Why might we pay attention to exemption rates? Well, a really important reason is that we often use them to proxy outbreak risk. If you followed the Disneyland outbreak last year and looked at media reports on that, there were many maps shown of exemption rates, you know, school-level exemption rates across the state in California and even across the country, and that was thought to sort of give us a suggestion of where hotspots might be. We assume when we see exemption rates that those are kids who are under-vaccinated or non-vaccinated. So the quality of that proxy is very important for research. Here are just some examples of how that's been used. Here's a paper back from an earlier measles outbreak in California, the 2008 San Diego outbreak, which was the outbreak that got me interested in this topic. One of the sort of epidemiological reports coming out of that outbreak that was published in Pediatrics, those yellow dots across San Diego County there are proportional to the personal belief exemption rate at schools. Those are school-level exemption rates, again, as an indicator of where sort of risk was in the county. This is some earlier work by me and Malia Jones from AJPH from a couple years ago, again, doing exactly the same thing. So the map on the left in blue, darker blue areas are county level higher PBE rates, and the hash marks showing counties whose PBE rate had increased from 2010. The map on the right, which Malia Jones created, is that sort of a heat map interpolating a PBE space across the state, and of course we color coded red the higher PBE rates, thinking sort of again of hotspots of risk. All that using personal belief exemption rates. So our research question for this grant and the study is, how vaccinated are kids with exemptions? And the reason, again, that that's important is, you know, we want to know, can we use exemption rates as proxies for under vaccination? So just, again, to summarize the motivation, we've seen, you know, large increases in exemption rates, and certainly in California and elsewhere, increases in vaccine-preventable disease outbreaks. There is lots of good prior evidence linking exemption rates and clustering to disease outbreak risk. And it would be very helpful when we want to evaluate the impact of new policies and programs, be they state-level policies or school practices that might affect exemption rates, how that also affects sort of clustering and outbreaks. So let me turn to our data. So in California, one of our main sources of surveillance data around childhood immunization is the school entry California school immunization record. The California Department of Health does a lot of surveillance, active surveillance with these data. You can see here there's just a box for each mandated dose that California requires for school entry. This is the form up through 2014. I'll talk about that in a second. But in addition to indicating the source of the vaccine records that was used to complete the CSIR, the kid is also indicated as being up to date or in compliance with their immunizations, or having a permanent or temporary medical exemption or a personal belief exemption. This CSIR is filled out not by the parent, but by a school employee. Could be a registrar, could be a health clerk, could be a nurse. I've talked to schools where it's the principal who fills it out, but using medical records that the parent provides. You know, either the yellow card that you get when your kid is born and gets filled out at the doctor's office, or more commonly these days, a printout from your doctor's office with the vaccine history. Up until 2014, California was one of the states where it was very easy to get a personal belief exemption. If you turned the CSIR over, there was a pre-printed affidavit and just a line to sign saying, these vaccinations are against my personal beliefs, I'm not vaccinating my child, and I understand that my child can be excluded from school in the case of an outbreak. So on a spectrum of it's really easy to get an exemption to it's really hard to get an exemption, California was in the very easy to get an exemption category. So our data, we wanted to go back a little bit before this 2014 law change. So we were using data from 2009, taking advantage of a sort of a special sample that the CDPH used that year. So California has 8,000 schools with kindergartens that are required to report to the CDPH every year. California is, for many reasons, a great state to study this in. One of the reasons is they have 500,000 kindergartners in every kindergarten cohort, so you've got a lot of kids to play with. They did their regular stratified random sample of schools, and in that year, in 2009, added a sample of the 50 schools in the state with the highest number of exemptions. From those two school samples, we have, again, their usual practice, which is to pull every sixth kid's record, the CSIR, and because of concerns about rising exemption rates in 2009, they also pulled all the PBEs, all the exempted kids, from the stratified random sample of schools, and all the PBEs from these 50 schools with the largest number of PBEs. And it's these two groups in green that we're looking at. So let me try to sort of show the extent of the problem here. So again, we're trying to figure out whether the vaccination status that we observe on the CSIR is correct, is a true measure of kids' vaccination status. These are just survival curves for the first MMR dose, which you would normally get around 12 months, and the second MMR dose, which you normally get around 4 to 6 years before kindergarten entry. And the solid line are the kids in our sample who have no exemptions, and the dotted lines are the kids with exemptions. And this is just time to that dose. And what you see is the sort of, you know, significant drop where most kids are getting that vaccine around 12 months old and then kind of a tail off to kindergarten entry, whereas the kids with exemptions here, many, many fewer of them are vaccinated at all, even by that 6-year-old, 72-month-old, or at least aren't observed to be vaccinated in the CSIR. Pretty much the same picture, just with a different timing for MMR2. If we look at distributions of how many doses are recorded on the CSIR for kids who are up to date, it's around 19 or 20, which is about the number of doses you need to be up to date, depending on the timing of some of those shots. For our exempted kids, it's very different. The modal response of more than half the kids have zero doses of any vaccine reported on the CSIR, and the rest have between 0 and 19. So our assumption is that this picture for our exempted kids underrepresents the number of doses that the kids have received. Why would we think that? Well, let's think about parents getting exemptions. Maybe they really don't want to vaccinate their kid and they're not vaccinating their kid at all, in which case observing no doses would be a correct reflection of their status. It may be, though, that the parent is just wanting to exempt from one vaccine. They just don't like MMR, for example, and the kid is actually vaccinated for everything else, but the parent doesn't provide those records at the time of registration, which is mandated by law, but doesn't happen a lot at the school, at the point of sort of school registration. The parent also may have a partially vaccinated or even fully vaccinated kid and just can't get their hands on the kid's medical records. It's time for kindergarten registration, you want to get in the door, get the spot in the program you want, maybe it's a district where that's important, and you said, I don't have the vaccine records, I want to register my kid today. The school may say, why don't you just sign this exemption? I know you're going to bring back the records later. Just sign this, you'll be in compliance. That's easier for you, that's easier for us than tracking you as a conditional acceptance kid. And we know that happens as well. So our assumption, for a number of reasons, is that this is a floor, this is sort of a low bound of the actual vaccination status. So our solution for that is to use imputation methods and also sort of clues that we get from any doses that are recorded on the kids' records and the vaccination patterns of other exempted kids at the same school. And again, I'll leave the gory details of the imputation process to the paper if you want to see it, but again, we're just trying to sort of make our best guess based on a number of assumptions and algorithms to fill in the blanks of that CSIR. Where do we think a blank might be a zero, kid never got that dose, versus a one, kid got that dose. And here are our results. Let me just orient you to this table. So we have two samples of schools. Remember, our random sample and our high PBE sample, so schools where the percentage of kids with exemptions is high. The top panel are the exempted kids in our sample, and the bottom panel, just to give you more of sort of a population level estimate, are all the kindergartners, if we sort of roll this up to the whole kindergarten population. The first row in each panel here is what we observe in the surveillance data. So this 0.184 basically tells us that if we just look at the CSIR at the exempted kids in the random sample, about 18% of them are shown to have the MMR2 vaccine, their second dose of MMR2. At high PBE schools, that's actually lower. It's only 11%. So not only is this a school with higher exemption rates, but exempted kids seem to be less vaccinated at high PBE schools than at the random sample of schools. Our three imputation scenarios bump that estimate up from, at the random sample, from 25% to 58%. And the three imputation scenarios are just sort of more generous assumptions about whether those kids are vaccinated or not, based on, again, the clues we're seeing in their record and in other exempted kids' records. At the high PBE school, we don't get as much of a bump from those imputations, but it goes up to 16%, all the way up to 63%. At the sort of full kindergarten cohort level, where we might sort of worry about where's herd immunity at this point, we're actually pretty good at the random sample of schools because exemption is a very low prevalence event there. So well up around 98-99% coverage for MMR2, taking into account all kids, and the imputation methods don't do a lot for us there because we're already kind of packed up against 100%. However, at the high PBE schools, taking into account all kindergartners, we're actually, even in our most generous imputation scenario, not quite up to where we want to be for the herd immunity threshold. You know, we want to see 90-95% of kids with their second dose of MMR, and even our most generous imputation scenario doesn't get us quite there. So in our mind, this is kind of a good news, bad news story, and I want to sort of be careful to articulate both of those pieces of news. So the good news is fairly obvious, right? I think we can assume that MMR coverage rates for exempted kids are likely higher than we observe in surveillance data. So again, think about the Disneyland outbreak when you're seeing those maps in the LA Times of where exemption rates are. Not all of those kids are unvaccinated. More of those kids are vaccinated than we might observe or report from surveillance data. The bad news, however, is that this sort of tells us how easy it is for measles to spread, for an outbreak to take hold, even when kids are more vaccinated than we think they are. Let me just make that a little bit more concrete. So some prior research has found a 22 to 35 times higher risk of measles incidence associated with vaccine refusal when we assume exempted kids are unvaccinated. So those studies use exemption as a proxy for non-vaccination. Our results suggest that the denominators from those risk estimates are probably too large, right? And if we take maybe 50% and 90%, so two of our different scenarios there from our imputation, they may be too large, those denominators, by a factor of 2 to 10%. We actually have to remove a bunch of those kids from our unvaccinated denominator because we think in our imputation methods that they're vaccinated. That suggests that the adjusted relative risk is more like 44 to 70 times higher if you use the 50% estimate, or 220 to 350 times higher if you use the 90% estimate. So that's the bad news. So what comes next? So in 2014, California, very helpfully for researchers, made exemption a little harder. Instead of that little line to sign on the back, you actually had to go get a healthcare provider signature to get an exemption. Disneyland outbreak happens at the end of 2014 into early 2015. That actually prompts the California legislature to pass another new law last summer, Senate Bill 277, that historically actually eliminates non-medical exemptions from the state. So they will join, as of next summer, Mississippi and West Virginia having no non-medical exemptions. So these imputation scenarios and these estimates are going to be important as we continue to track the impact of that law on exemption prevalence, exemption clustering, and disease outbreak risk and actual outbreak. So happy to entertain questions in some remaining minutes. Not that I know of. Yeah, I'm sorry. Ask me about seroprevalence studies. In California, or were you asking about anywhere? Okay, yeah. So the NHANES, so recent, like since Disneyland, no. But yeah, it's in the NHANES and other surveillance data. Yes. Yeah. So they have these like three time points. So preschool, daycare, kindergarten, and then seventh grade. So even if you had an exemption in place in kindergarten, you've got to re-up that in seventh grade. And of course, again, that will go away in 2016 when there aren't non-medical exemptions anymore. There's also been an attempt already at a recall of Senate Bill 277, which did not get enough signatures to go on the California ballot. So we're pretty confident at this point it'll go into effect. Any questions? Yeah. That's a really good question, right? So the question is, how do we extrapolate or interpolate these sort of individual figures to a population level? You've got to make a lot more assumptions, right, about the distribution of those exempted or unvaccinated kids in populations, and a lot of our early work looks at that. So what is the clustering? What is the mixing of unvaccinated and vaccinated kids? We've developed what we call sort of risk measures or vulnerability measures, which are for a given exempted kid or unvaccinated kid, what is the school level unvaccinated prevalence that they see? And for the average up-to-date kid, what is the prevalence that they see? So you can imagine if you have a vector that you know has an R-naught of 20 or 25, what's the likelihood that an infected kid, if introduced, which is also stochastic, right, will bump into a susceptible? That's one way we've approached it. Yeah. Public and private. Yep. Absolutely. Yeah, so we just submitted an RO1 to the NIH to ask that question and many others about some unintended consequences of SB 277. Currently in California, homeschool kids aren't exempt. The exemption laws still apply to homeschool kids if they're registered through a homeschool charter. With SB 277, if your kid's in an independent study program, basically a homeschooling program through a charter, SB 277 will not apply. You will not have to have your kid vaccinated. So we have certainly at the margin expect some parents to move towards the homeschooling option.
Okay, we agree. We need to move on.
Okay, thank you.
There will probably be time with the